Hour number two, Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game on this Wednesday. Tim Hasselbeck, our weekly chat with him coming up at high noon. We say hello to a good friend of the show, Richard Justice, MLB.com. Richard, how you doing? How the heck are you?
I'm good. How are you guys?
We're doing fantastic.
Great.
Is there anything, been anything to talk about in the baseball world? Yeah, I know it's the off season. Anything going on?
Going on. Just, yeah. You know, a couple of stones in the pond causing ripples. But other than that, quiet.
Ripples. That's a ripples or waves, depending on who you talk to.
Right.
You're a guy that certainly understands the Houston landscape for sure. When did you first get wind of something like this, and what's been your reaction to, like you said, ripple or whatever you want to do to describe where it's at today? You know, now that the smoke is not cleared, it's not over, but what do you make of all this?
It's gut-wrenching, because when you consider the background that in 17 Houston had been devastated by a hurricane, and the team rallied around the city rallied around the team played with such joy and energy. The question I would get the most is, are they really like that? Do they really love it that much? And Houston was always the city that watched other cities celebrate, watched other cities have their parades. And I'm telling you, like, when they would take the trophy around, people would look at it like, keep an eye on that thing, because they're going to take that away from us and take it to Boston or St. Louis or someplace else. That's what it meant. I mean, people love this team beyond what words can express. And now to have it, it's just a gut punch to be told that whether it was that they cheated. I mean, I don't know any other way to put it, that they didn't play by the rules. And it's about as bad as it can get. I have fans asking, you know, is there a scrap of hope? Maybe they did this, maybe they didn't. Maybe it's not as bad as it seems. Maybe everybody else was doing it, but it's bad.
Yeah, and you understand this because you've been covering the game a long time, and when we all went through the steroid era, it's just like, right, it's not just one, right? You know, it's not isolated. You know, it's not one group. It's not one guy, as we would later find out, and it's not one position or one type of player. I mean, we never at the beginning never thought pitchers. Well, they're not doing it. Well, we found out, you know, they're doing steroids too. So, you know, the question is, you know, we talk a lot of baseball on the show, and we have a lot of major leaguers, current and former, that live here in Nashville. So we talk to them all the time on this show. And isn't it amazing, Richard, how much we wanted to blame the ball last year for all the home runs? And maybe it was the ball, but
maybe we're
finding something else out, right?
No. I mean, look, steroids went throughout the game. We don't know the extent of the cheating yet. We do know the Astros were more blatant about it than everybody else, and that the commissioner had sent out a directive in 2017 saying, I'm going to hold the people. This was after the Red Sox were found with a Fitbit in the dugout, relaying signs, and I'm going to hold people accountable for this. And the Astros just thought, we're smarter than you are. We can get away with it. I wouldn't go so far. I mean, I'd heard other teams complaining about the Astros for a long time, but until you get one player with the guts to put his name on it, in this case, that was Mike Fiers. You know, it doesn't go very far. I'm not sure that every team does it. Every team is looking for an advantage. But this, to me, is about the Houston Astros.
Okay. Fair enough. That's why we're having you on. So you're telling me I'm the horse. Whoa, slow down. Slow down.
Yeah. The justification is everybody was doing it. We don't know that everybody was doing it. The commissioner's attorney, and what he dealt with was the facts in front of him. And the facts in front of him were damning for the Houston Astros. If there's other things out there, I'm sure it will come out eventually. It always does. But steroids were the whole sport, and the whole sport just dropped the ball on maintaining vigilance about PEDs. And they just decided to crack down on it, you know.
Where do you stand on the Altuve video that we've all seen running to home plate? Do you take anything from that at all?
Well, here's what I say to that is, it doesn't matter. You have, don't you know, like last Saturday at their fan fest, Alex Bregman sort of had a smirk on his face talking to the media. Now, and refused to apologize. Now, the owner said yesterday, Jim Crane said, believe me, when we get to spring training, we're going to have a meeting, and they're all going to apologize for the damage they did to their sport, the city, the franchise. They're going to apologize. But Alex had a smirk on his face, and I think somebody's got to tell the guy, like, you smirk when you got away with it. You didn't get away with it. You ended at least four careers in baseball. You embarrassed a city. You devastated a fan base that had been so loyal to you and all of that. So, and he said the buzzer was charges of using the buzzer was ridiculous. Doesn't matter. You've opened this door now, and anything you want to suspect people of, you can't say, oh, fake outrage. No, I don't know whether they were using a buzzer or not. I have heard they were, and I've heard the players say they weren't. But you've said, look, the rules don't apply to us, but those rules do apply. Nobody's going to believe you when you deny it now.
We're talking to Richard Justice from MLB.com. Great perspective on what is happening in baseball right now. So, Richard, I've been fascinated by this. I went back because I read Bill Plaschke's article in the LA Times making the argument that they should forfeit or vacate the World Series. I wanted to watch the games that he referenced, the Yu Darvish starts. There's been a lot of talk about those two particular starts. And honestly, I do look at the pitches and I say, were those great pitches? He threw a lot of balls that didn't have great break. John Smoltz would comment on that. These are not good pitches. They were in the middle of the plate. So I do wonder specifically how many times they had the call, how many times they didn't, what days did they have more than others, what days were they able to decode, home, road, all of those things. Do you think we'll find out more detail over time, or is this where we're going to leave it?
I think a lot of the points he made were ridiculous. Alex Wood, who pitched a great game four in the 2017 World Series, said what they noticed in the two games at Dodger Stadium where the Astros were changing signs so frequently that it told them, we think you're cheating. And that told the Dodgers, well, they must be cheating. So Alex Wood went into game four and just said, we're changing the signs. I think he said they changed the signs every 12 pitches because they were aware of this.
Yeah.
The A's come in. The A's have made a history of changing signs. When the Washington Nationals in the World Series games, they had such a complicated system that two things. You notice Fox did not show the catcher dropping the signs, but the other thing was you would see pitchers look in their hats at times for the coding. So, yeah, you got to be aware of this stuff. I mean, Justin Verlander pitched a game at Yankee Stadium this year, and there were no signs. There were no signs that I could tell, so I don't know how they were communicating. But that's part of it. If you wasn't prepared for this, I would say he dropped the ball on that because you can stop this stuff. You can change the pattern pretty quickly, and I think that's what we saw the Nationals do in the World Series last fall.
Yeah, and it does seem like everybody now. You gave a great example of the pitcher taking his hat off and looking inside for what the changed code is going to be. So it seems like I feel fairly confident, Richard, that going forward here with all of this, the awareness number one, the harsh penalty. Plus, everybody now is trying to evolve and make it harder to decode that we can be confident that what we're going to see going forward, it's going to be harder and harder to do this. True?
Well, and you can cheat. If you think you're smart enough to get away with it, this has been the problem with the steroids. When steroid testing first went in, I asked Rob Manfred, was in the council who did the labor agreement, and I said, who's going to test positive for steroids now? And he said, well, you're always going to have idiots who think I've got a cleansing agent, a masking agent, or somebody's going to convince them I have a substance that's not detectable, I can get around. So you're always going to have that. Here's the risk in doing this, and in the sign stealing part of it is all you do is risk your reputation and your career, the career for the baseball people. And so I love Jose Altuve, and I love Alex Bregman, and I love watching them play. But everything they do is going to be called into question. You can throw the whole front office out and get a whole new front office. But you can't take the cloud away from the clubhouse because the players are going to be the same. So what if the Astros are two games under .500 in July and George Springer is hitting .220? the narrative is going to be, and fairly so, you guys couldn't do it playing by the rules. I mean, there's a tremendous amount of pressure on that team to show that, hey, we can do it playing by the rules. All you can do is do what the New England Patriots do. Just keep winning and show that it wasn't about cheating, that we were really good.
Richard Justice is with us. And Richard, the discussion has come up. You've had some pitchers go on the record and saying, you know, I'd rather have a guy up there who was full-blown steroids than a guy that knew what I was going to throw. They put it in two different categories. And so with that in mind, you know, you had the voting yesterday. We all watched Derek Jeter get in and Larry Walker. But the other sub-discussion is, okay, where are Clemens and Bonds now? And they seem to be kind of holding steady. They're on the ballot, I guess, for two more years. So how has that thinking evolved based on what we're seeing here?
They've stalled. Here's my thinking on that. If you pick up a ballot and look at it, you're not going to know who used and who didn't. So you're just going to – so your approach will be, I'm going to guess, or I'm going to vote for the best players on the ballot. And you can rationalize it 100 different ways. The way I rationalize it is, I don't know who did and who didn't. And Clemens' career in Boston qualified him for the Hall of Fame. Before Barry added all the muscle, he'd had 494 home runs. He was going to the Hall of Fame. Now, whether that's a good rationalization or not, but, you know, I'm pretty sure we've already voted for a steroid user. It gets too complicated, so just vote for the best players on it. And I think that's what we've seen as the voting. They've started to kick out people who are not connected to the game anymore, and just go vote for the best players. Don't overthink it, because anybody who says Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens weren't Hall of Famers in terms of their ability and their accomplishments, I would argue with that. And again, I'm sure there are steroid users in the Hall of Fame, and it's you know, the more people say, well, you should consider the character clause. Now, if we're going to go through there and start kicking out people on morality and all of that, that gets way too complicated. In fact, it's so complicated that you think at times, I don't even want to be a part of this anymore. But I appreciate the Hall of Fame, and just seeing the look on Larry Walker's face yesterday and getting in made me realize, hey, do what you can in terms of making right decisions.
Richard, do we know the one person that didn't vote for Derek Jeter? Because I think that's
no,
the biggest.
But here's my, I'll defend the guy. And like, okay, I think you vote for him because you love Mariano Rivera, and those guys are going to be going to old timers games at Yankee Stadium for the next 30 years. And it's always something Rivera can hold over Jeter. Like, how many unanimous? You and I, Jeets, we were the only unanimous. Oh, that's right. One guy didn't vote for you. So, hey, look, the guy got – look, if you can go through – I talked to a guy one time that didn't vote for Seaver. I said, I'm not one to tell you how to vote, but I don't know where you're putting your bar, but it may be a little too high. I mean, if Tom Seaver – I saw somebody wrote this on Jay Jaffe does a great job for Fangraphs analyzing Hall of Fame voting. He said, I've looked at Jeter's numbers in and out, up and down, and there's not one reason not to vote for him. There's not one reason. You know, like Larry Walker, that's a legit debate. He's a borderline Hall of Famer who did play 30% of his games at Coors Field. So you really – analytics really helped him in being able to sort through the numbers and come up with, is this guy one of the greatest right fielders in the history of the game? And – you know, he picked up, I think 4 years ago, he was at 10%. So he clears the bar by six votes in his final year on the ballot.
Do you think Curt Schilling finally gets in next year?
Yep. And I was just, to me, Schilling and Mussina were always in the same category. Now, you say their ERA didn't hold up to Gibson and Koufax, et cetera. We'll look at the era they pitched in. The ballparks were smaller, steroids made the players bigger, the bats got harder, the baseballs got harder, all that stuff. He was dominant. And you look at those between 92 and 2004, he was fifth in FIP, this thing that sort of tries to factor in a more sophisticated ERA, and he was sixth in innings and OPS and batting average and ERA, and the only guys in front of him for the most part are Pedro, Smoltz, Tommy Glavin, and Pedro Martinez, Hall of Famers. And Clemens is in that too. But, yeah, he gets in, and he deserves to be in. And then when you factor in his postseason, he's clearly a Hall of Famer. Probably if he can keep his mouth shut for the next year, he'll be a Hall of Famer.
Well,
I mean, that's not easy.
Maybe not
again. 90%. You know, I've known the guy since he was since he first came up. You know, he's sort of evolved into somebody I didn't know. But I remember one time the Orioles, when I was covering the Orioles, they sent him back to the minor leagues, and Frank Robinson. I say to Frank Robinson, who was then the manager, I said, "You know what? Maybe something will click this time, and he'll finally get it." And Frank looked at me and goes, "That kid ain't never going to get it." But he did get it, and it was a very tough conversation with Clemens in the weight room at the Astrodome during an offseason. Basically, Clemens says, and Kurt will tell you this, Clemens said to him, "You know what? You're wasting your career. You've got all this talent, and you're throwing it away." And Kurt became a Hall of Famer after that.
Interesting. Willie knows. I've been saying this for well over a decade. I'd like to see Omar Vizquel in the Hall. I really would like to see
that him. That is a really interesting one. I think he's going to get in. I've had long talks with him about that. And I said, how does it feel like you played 22 years, you were the gold standard for defensive shortstops, as Mazeroski was the gold standard for second baseman? How does it make you feel? And he goes, really, it doesn't tick me off. I'm interested in the conversation and looking at it. He's one of those guys that if he goes into the Hall of Fame, I think he's got a great shot. If he goes into the Hall of Fame, and we saw, you know, Vizquel, he jumped 10%, Rowland 18%, Billy Wagner 15%. If he goes in, not one of those guys up on that stage will say he doesn't belong in, because when you watched him play every day, even the guys who covered him in Cleveland, San Francisco for a long time, you go, my goodness, that guy is really great at shortstop.
I did in the mid-90s, and I saw it every day, and he was magical.
Oh, man,
he was magical.
Personality. Like, you go in that, you know, the Indians had some tough guys in those years, Bell and Eddie and people,
Tomei.
Edinburgh and people like that.
Yep.
But he was a ray of sunshine.
He was. He was great to deal with. Manny Ramirez we never saw, but we always used to joke that there was a hidden tunnel underneath the Jacobs Field because nobody ever saw him. But nonetheless, I hope he gets in. Richard, it's always good to catch up with you. Thanks for doing this as always, and we'll talk to you down the road.
Thanks for having me.
All right, that is Richard Justice, MLB.com. We're going to keep with this theme. We're going to talk about some things along these lines on the other side. Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.